Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world, on the internet, by webcast, and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Well, we're careering towards the end of the year, and we've got a bit of a freeze up here in the UK. You know that I don't do cold, so at the moment I've got a couple of layers on. I've also got various forms of quite old heating going, trying to keep myself reasonably warm, and just praying that this winter spell goes away as quickly as possible. If you're in a sunny part of the world, aren't you lucky? I want to deal with quite a few of your emails before we get to the guest this time. It's a return visit from Dr. Judy Wood and her theories about 9/11. She'll probably castigate me for using the word theories because she says they're facts. You determine when we talk with her. We've talked with her before. I thought she was a great guest, and a lot of you have been asking what happened to Judy Wood and will she come back? Well, she is coming back. She's on this show. If you want to get in touch with me, go to the website www.theunexplained.tv, www.theunexplained.tv, and you can follow the link there and send me an email, or you can make a donation to the show if you'd like to. The website designed and created and maintained by Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool. Okay, let's deal with your emails now. Rachel says, best of luck in 2015. Rachel, that was very kind. Thank you very much. Numa, an artist in France, is one of many people who did not like Dr. David Clark. And, you know, I understand what you're saying. Some of you loved him. A lot of you didn't. So Numa in France says, I completely disagree with Dr. Clark's pretentious way of dealing with the ET phenomenon, etc. Okay. Martin Booker in New Zealand. Will Dr. Clark scoff if he himself has a UFO experience? I wonder. John Prindle suggests Douglas Oswell. Completely different topic, this. Something to do with the Unabomber. I'll look into that. Thank you, John. Lennon Southport turned off Dr. David Clark. Here we go again after 25 minutes. Because he thought Dr. David Clark was a know-it-all. Okay, I'm going to talk about this in just a moment. Dewin Barnett, nice to hear from you. Riley in Calgary thinks that Dr. Clark is narrow-minded. Sky C in Brisbane takes us away from Dr. David Clark, says that I like to listen to your shows on my lonely runs, and suggests that Lorraine Warren would be a good guest. Sky C in Brisbane, what a great place to live. Jeff in Huntingdon, thank you for your kind comments. What else have we got? Paul Brown in Australia, thank you very much for getting in touch. Ben in York, good to hear from you. Thomas O wonders if David Clark is actually an MI5 man. I knew somebody would say that. Matt in Sydney, David Clark, very refreshing, says Matt in Sydney. A few of you thought so. Anne Pedersen in Denmark, some nice comments from you. Thank you, Anne. Thomas E. Ammons, thank you very much for getting in touch. Josh W. thinks that I should get a guest on about the Devil's Graveyard. I need to do that for the title alone, I think, Josh. Finley in Beijing, Dr. David Clark show, waste of time. Okay, Finley. Luke, heard edition 183, which was David Clark, on a plane at 35,000 feet above Pakistan, and is now safely back in North Wales. Nice to hear from you, Luke. Eli DeMeo in Montreal, Canada, wants me to say hi to Tony Colasurdo. I hope I've said both your names right. So Eli or Ellie DeMeo in Montreal. Hello to Tony Colasurdo. Nice to know that you're both there. Andy Connolly in Devon, hello. Paul Stanley also thought that Dr. David Clark was refreshing. Don O'Malley, thank you for getting in touch. Mike Dawley called the David Clark show poppycock. Paul C., nice to hear from you. Chuck Kinney in Phoenix, Arizona, thinks that David Clark is a debunker, period. Shane from Down Under got in touch. Nice to hear from you, Shane. And an old friend of this show, Mladen in Dubrovnik. All points taken, Mladen. Right. Let's unpick some of this now. And also I'm going to talk about Harry Cooper, the guest on edition 184, Shark Hunters, about the German U-boat service and the escape, supposedly, of Hitler to South America. First of all, David Clark. Now, all I can say about this, and I am still getting email about this, is that I have guests on here not because I agree with them necessarily, but because I think that they will test people's perceptions. Dr. David Clark believes that most of what we talk about here is rationally explainable, and people who think that little green men from outer space exist are simply wrong. That's his point of view. Now, some of you said, I hated that show, turned it straight off. The only thing I would say is, you know, that is your prerogative. Of course, turn it off if you don't like it. But I wonder if it's a good idea to turn somebody off after just a couple of minutes when you haven't heard why they're making you mad, if you know what I'm saying. There was some interesting stuff in that show, I thought. I don't take a view on the guests, but I understand why he upset a lot of you, and I also understand why a lot of you thought he was refreshing. I like to hear different points of view. I think that's the only way that you learn. Harry Cooper, similar kind of story. A lot of you very upset about supposed right-wing comments that he made. I have to say, look, I'm in the UK. I didn't realise this was a right-wing issue. I don't know where I've been. And, you know, OK, if that's so, I'm naive. But I didn't know about guns. Now, all I did was remark that a lot of us here think that it's a bit odd that so many people have guns in the United States, because we don't hear. It's something that's very hard for us to get our heads round. And that's basically it. And Harry Cooper told me his view. Also, if you listened, and I know some of you said I turned it off after a few minutes, but if you listened all the way through, two things. You would have noticed that most of it was about the supposed escape of Adolf Hitler to Argentina after World War II via various places and the German U-boat service, which we also talked about. Also, he was vehement at the end of the piece that we did together that he doesn't get involved in politics. So I'm not sure where this right-wing thing comes from. You know, maybe you're looking at other sources. I don't know. I keep out of all of that. But I was interested in what the guy had to say. And I think if I try and please everybody all the time, I'm really seriously going to fail with this show. So I can only do my best. I'm one guy out here trying to do something different. And I'm giving it everything that I've got. And let me tell you, sometimes lately, that's not as much as it might be. Because, you know, life is tough for us all. So I hope that kind of explains. I'm not going to read any more of the emails about Dr. David Clark, and probably not about Harry Cooper either, because they go round the same stuff. A lot of you found what he had to say, Harry Cooper I'm talking about, really interesting. And a lot of you want to hear more about this Hitler story. So we will get on to that. Thank you very much, though, for the many, many people who've emailed supporting me through all of the times we've had here, the good times, the bad times. Look, I'm going into this Christmas without my mother and father. And a lot of people, when they get to my age, don't have their mother and father. But they were such an enormous influence in my life, my Liverpool mum and dad, that I'm already, it's not even Christmas yet, enormously missing them. And, you know, I'm going to have to get through this period, as many of us will, without that rock of support. So, you know, it's an interesting time, let's put it that way. Okay, let's get on Dr. Judy Wood now. Judy Wood, of course, was the person who published a book that is now changing hands on the internet for $300 or $400 a time, depending on where you look. This is about the Twin Towers, and Judy Wood's claim that the Twin Towers, and she says it's backed by extensive fact. Well, this is a huge book. It's more than 400 pages long. There are lots of photographs and a lot of science in there. That the Twin Towers were somehow turned to dust. A lot of you at the time had your say about that, and I wanted to get her back on here also to see what she's doing now. She doesn't court publicity. People do talk about her. She does do interviews. She picks them very carefully. So let's get her on now as we move to the end of this year, 2014. Dr. Judy Wood in the US. Judy, nice to talk to you again.
Well, thank you very much for having me back on for, you know, being interested still.
No, well, I am interested, Judy, and I think you know why that is. That's because this 9/11 issue has been part of my life since it happened, and you know that I covered, and I won't bore my listeners anymore with the story, but I covered both the first and second anniversaries of 9/11, but I was on air in London talking to London about this thing, which for us happened in the afternoon, for you happened in the morning time, the beginning of the business day. And I can't get it out of my head. I feel that it's always going to be a part of me because of all of the people that I met and all of the connections that I met. And the fact that questions were triggered in my small brain at that time. And they're the kind of questions that stay with you subliminally. They don't go away, but they're not conscious questions. They're almost subliminal questions. You know, they're like those little ads that they banned in your country and my country on television, little flashes. And every so often I have a little thought about that. And it's rather like a doubt that kicks in every so often. And
or it's a question that, well, and then you quickly automatically assume if it was for real, if it really was valid, somebody else would, you know, the grown-ups would have taken care of it.
Yeah, and you said that last time when we talked, what is it now, 2 years ago or more, that you assumed the grown-ups would take care of it, and you realized then they wouldn't, and your mother said to you, what are you going to do, giving up your job to do this? And you said to her,
no,
"I've never."
She said, "If you do that, you're going to lose your job."
That's right. Yeah, and you said,
"And I said, if I don't do it, you know,
no one's going to have a job." Yeah, which is a quote that stuck with me for the last 2 years, because I think what you did, whatever view people take of it, and they take a variety of views. I get email. I got a lot of email right after your show saying, right on, Judy Wood, absolutely. And of course, a lot of emails saying, this person's just completely wrong. And not only that, she's raking over something that we have to move on from. So I got all of that at the time.
Let me ask you a question.
Go on.
9/11 was a pretty big deal. The whole world knew about it. It is the biggest deal in the world, in our lifetime and in our knowable history. Now, do you think those who planned it just forgot to plan a cover-up?
I would imagine if it was part of it, no. Now, very good that you should mention that. There's no reason...
Do you think that they didn't anticipate people would start asking questions?
Well, I would imagine, given... I'll tell you what I was going to tell you. Courtney Brown, now I don't know what you make of remote viewing. You might think it's complete bunkum. You might think it's garbage. You might think it is the greatest thing ever. But Courtney Brown and his team, whatever... people may think of them, remote viewed 9/11. They actually went there and they did a complete presentation about it. You might have seen it, don't know if you did. But they saw a team of people who planned every aspect of this thing. And although he didn't say directed energy weapon, although I think that was part of the equation, also a submarine off New York and some kind of missile or something like that. I'm doing this from memory.
I like to leave things to... you know, evidence that everyone can look at and see for themselves. So you don't have to believe somebody. You don't have to trust and believe. As soon as you start believing in what somebody else says, you can easily get hoodwinked.
They use that system and drew pictures of people they said were behind this.
You're talking about your belief in what someone else said. That's not admissible in court. That's hearsay.
In what? How was I talking about my belief in what somebody said?
Well, you're talking about what they said.
I wasn't saying that I believed it. I was just saying that they said it.
Right. And so I'd like to come back to what evidence that people can observe for themselves, and so, rather than trusting in what someone else says. You know, like somebody has some ability to think about what they mentally go back in time and see what happened on 9/11. Well, that's going to take our belief in what they're saying. We can't observe their evidence. So it doesn't do any good.
But everything in this world, doesn't it, from religion to politics to science, requires belief or not. You either believe a theory that is put out before you. You hate the word theory, I know.
But is 2 + 2 = 4?
Yeah, that's a fact. Yeah, no. Well, yes, if you believe that you believe in our system of mathematics.
Well, it's based on what the convention is for adding two items and two items, and you can come up with the number 4. And what the number 4 represents is 4 items. And counting. As long as you understand the counting system. Now, if what we've created also is there's no experts. You don't need opinion and an internet connection. Make someone an expert. They can get somebody to believe in what they're dishing out. That makes them an expert. So I've got this example that people say, well, we're looking at the same evidence and coming up with just different conclusions. Well, okay, that's said by a 5-year-old to a university math professor. The 5-year-old has the opinion that because 2 + 2 = 4 and 2 × 2 = 4, then 3 × 3 must = 6. And the math professor has the opinion that 3 × 3 = 9. So it's just a matter of opinion. Maybe they're both right. Maybe neither one's right. I guess we'll never know because we don't have a consensus. Do you see how to cover up irrefutable evidence? You create doubt and you create controversy.
And you believe that controversy and doubt have been stirred up around your work. Is that so?
Controversy and doubt, they actually use those words. the most controversial person on the planet, the most controversial this, and the name of a conference is what's controversial and what's not. No, if you're going to, you know, determine how tall somebody is, don't you start with a tape measure, not a theory, not a hypothesis, not speculation. You just get out your tape measure. Either you've measured their height or you haven't.
But when they describe you as controversial, that's because controversy revolves around you inevitably.
That's because controversy is the goal. If you create doubt, like what the tobacco industry did, and I'd like to read the quote from an article about the cultural production of ignorance. The study of the cultural production of ignorance, it's a rich field, especially today when whole industries devote themselves to sowing public misinformation and doubt about their products and activities. The tobacco industry was a pioneer of this. Its goal was to erode public acceptance of the scientifically proven links between smoking and disease. In the words of an internal 1969 legal memo, opponents extracted from Brown and Williamson's files, doubt is our product. That's quote, doubt is our product. Big Tobacco's methods should not be to debunk the evidence, the memo's author wrote, but to establish controversy. And it worked. You know, it was a clear, you know, connection between cigarette smoking and you know, lung cancer and health problems.
Well, controversy they may well have engendered. They may well have created rather than engendered controversy. However, the final end
doubt,
of it all...
Doubt was their product. Hmm? As long as you create doubt.
Sure.
You don't have to debunk the scientific findings. These create doubt about it, and so people don't believe the
findings. But in the case of smoking, we had the doubt, and I lived through the years of doubt when the tobacco industry, Big Tobacco, questioned the research and whether people were getting sick like this. Now, of course, it's accepted fact. So eventually you get there. Are you hoping that is what is going to happen with your work?
Well, it's my work. It's not. You don't have to believe in. See, even there, you had to believe in the studies. But with my work, I provide the evidence for people to look at themselves. I don't want people to believe me. I want them to believe themselves. And my book is actually a course in critical thinking, getting people to look at, you know, I ask a question. In order to answer that question, you start looking at that part of the photo and thinking about it, and it goes through your brain.
Do you find that a lot of people switch off, though, Judy, when you try and explain to them? I have some colleagues who I tried to explain your work and you to a couple of weeks ago, and I talked about the vehicles on the scene of 9/11 that burned somehow from the inside out rather from the outside in, which is what you would expect.
I would say it was more material specific. Like, you know, like for example, steel got toasted, and I use the word toasted because I don't know if it was a conventional fire. So it just toasted. It's toast. It's history. That's the word we use for, you know, something being, you know, the car is totaled. You have to get another one. You can't get it. It's beyond repair.
Well, I tried to tell him about, the rubber tires.
The steel is toasted, but the nylon or plastic molding around the window is in pristine condition.
Mm-hmm. And what about the tires, the rubber tires on some of the cars?
Well, some's there and some's not. But you see patterns of things that occur, like this particular car, or like the police car with the plastic or the polycarbonate lights fixtures on top, you know, for the you know, the police turn the lights on. The thing that the rack of lights on the top, there's a police car that's totally toasted. I mean, not a bit of upholstery left or anything in the front end. You know, the entire inside is toasted, but the polycarbonate lights are still there. They're not melted.
Well, that differential destruction is something that I tried to explain to some colleagues, and they just didn't want to go there.
If you had a rip-roaring fire inside, you know, the passenger compartment of that police car, it would have been a hot grill on the roof that would have surely melted. The polycarbonate lights melt like, you know, 100, 120 degrees, I mean, at pretty low temperatures.
But the people that I talked to, and these were journalists, okay, they just didn't want to go there.
Because once you politicize something, it's no longer scientific in their minds. And 9/11 has been politicized. That's part of the cover-up. That keeps people from looking at evidence. They now have to fight about, you know, rah, rah for our team. Let's root for our team. And let's go get the enemy. There's only one truth, one factual set of data.
So a couple of years on from when we spoke last, Judy, it's a couple of years now. Where are you at? What have these couple of years been like for you?
I guess similar things. I've talked to some people and give presentations. I've done a couple presentations in Europe, and there are receptive audiences places, and people are realizing more that they've been hoodwinked. It's easy to fool somebody once, but to tell them that they've been fooled, that's harder. And to tell them they've been fooled twice, that's even harder yet. Because people have to admit they were hoodwinked, and they don't want to admit that. And one of the best qualities of my book is that it's just you and the book. There's nobody to save face to. You can sit there and read the book. And another reason why I don't have it online is you tend to scan what is online. You don't contemplate about what you've read. And if you have a book in your hands, you look at it, you read a paragraph, and you're sitting there on the sofa, read a paragraph, and you look into space, and you think about it. You think about the implications.
Well,
people don't tend to do that online.
Here's the book. There's my copy. I'm holding it in my hand now. And it is a book that I keep, for reasons that I don't entirely comprehend, but I keep going back to it. And you're right. If it was online, I would scan it, and then that would be done for me. I wouldn't keep going back to it. But it's on my bookshelf, and I don't keep many of the books that I get sent.
And there's another thing about my books has been in print for, over 4 years. And no one's been able to refute anything in my book. I haven't had to redact anything. That, people who morph their story, with each presentation, then somebody calls them on something, so they morph their story again and keep altering it. And, is it thermite? Is it super thermite? Is it thermate? Is it nano-enhanced thermite? Is it nanothermite, nanothermetic material? It kept morphing as one thing ran out of gas, but you can't do that with a book in print because how do you keep changing it? And there's a lot of people that have PDFs that they keep changing online. But the fact that this is in print and it hasn't had to be changed, it hasn't had to be redacted, I think that should state something to that.
We talked about these 2 years. You said you've given some presentations. I know you've been doing some writing.
Yep.
Have they been easy for you, Judy, though? Have you had people coming and supporting you? I mean, people who are scientific like yourself.
Oh, there are. And actually, someone recently sent me something that was just pretty awesome. I shouldn't let the cat out of the bag on what it is. And there's various engineers that come to me, but, they can't really afford to stick their neck out. Look what happened to me. I can't get into that back into that field. You can't teach with this kind of history because if people love to get online and see what all the trolls have said about you. And then that distracts away from the teaching environment.
But you said that something, or you can't tell me what it is, you don't want to let the cat out of the bag, but yes, somebody said something that was supportive of you?
Oh, more than that, yeah. We'll find out later. But there's quite a few engineers who do support my work. They don't belong to a club. You don't need to belong to a club to have your own thinking. Clubs tend to dictate, group think. But there's a whole lot of individual people who do stand up. But, it's stuff that people try to, they can't refute what's in my book. So they've now resorted to making up stories. Like you've seen my book. Have you found any Arabians from outer space in my book?
No, I mean, it's straight
what would you say
diagrams,
about
facts.
Who says that I talk about laser beams from space?
Well, you don't. Well, I've read the book. You don't.
Yeah, and people say, well, I don't need to read the book because she's been her laser beams from space have been debunked. There's those rumors carry, and we have people who just believe in rumors. That's what I talk about, believing what somebody else says. Why you shouldn't do that?
You're yourself. You've got great intestinal fortitude, Judy. Yeah, to do this, you have to have had that.
Mm-hmm.
Does it get you down though?
No, I've learned a lot about people from it. You get more out of life from that because stuff I wouldn't have known. I wouldn't have known how easily, because I'm not susceptible so much to groupthink. I wouldn't have realized so many people are. And like why the tobacco industry was so successful and how easy it is to market, how easy it is to control public opinion. I would not have any appreciation for that. It's scary.
And I suppose once you see that happen over this, you say over tobacco, you start seeing it everywhere.
Right. Look at the cover of my book. You, if you've read it, you appreciate what that cover image is showing. And you realize there's 14 people who survived down at the bottom of that frothing up, you know, building turning to dust.
I mean, what it looks like is Niagara Falls.
Right. And it's, the building's just frothing up into dust like an Alka-Seltzer tablet. You know, it's just, you know, foaming up, effervescing. And there are 14 people who survived in Stairwell B, and they thought they were goners. They, you know, so buried, they, you know, be forever till they got the 106 stories off of them, and you know, be dead by then. And then a little bit later, the dust cloud cleared, and they looked up and saw blue sky. And then they later walked out on their own.
Have you heard, since we talked a couple of years ago, have you heard from any of the people who went through the experience of 9/11? The people in New York, have they been in touch with you?
I have. I've talked to several. I don't disclose who they are because I want to protect them.
Well, that's fine. But what sorts of things do they say?
Because all sorts. Because trolls have even called people up at 2 a.m. acting drunk, you know, and harassing them. And that's wicked.
Well, that's just wrong. And, you know, those people need to feel the force of the law. But what sorts of things have they said to you? We don't need to know who they are.
Oh, but you know, there are statements in the book about it, like, you know, that the air was cooler than ambient temperature. You know, it was bizarre. It was quiet. There's everything turned to dust. There's you know, quite a few different ones. There's a fellow who worked in, I think it was on the 27th floor of the North Tower, who after the shenanigans up above were going on, he decided he wasn't going to get any work done, just going to pack up his stuff and go home for the day. And he walks past Tower 2 on the way to the ferry, and He didn't realize anything happened, and he looked up and saw, you know, smoldering something coming out of it, but it looked like it was under control. He gets down the ferry dock, and some idiot comes running up to him, telling him the Tower 2 just collapsed. Like, he was an idiot because they assumed he was an idiot because, well, he just went by the building. It was in good health. They didn't hear any crash. They didn't feel the ground rumble. And they're just like 2 blocks away. And then the ferry comes, they get on the ferry, they get partway out in the Hudson, look back, and there's only one tower standing. Mm. They couldn't see it before because, you know, the shorter buildings were blocking their view of the taller buildings. And then this dust cloud rolls over them, and they realize that's the remains of Tower 2, basically.
Okay, that's part of the testament that is your book. I'm just wondering what's happened in the intervening 2 years, well, if people have got in touch.
That wasn't in my book. That issue wasn't in my book. But there's other ones who've contacted me on other particular issues that are in there, too, of, you know, things that happened to people.
But what I'm trying to get at is, how has your... I don't want to use the word belief, but I don't have another word. Your belief in your work been affected by what you've heard in the last couple of years?
It isn't my belief in my work. I mean, I don't put in the book things that I don't know. Hmm. I don't put in their speculation. Everything that's in the book is what I know that I know that I know, and why I know it, or why anyone else can know it too.
All right. Do you feel any differently about your work in the light of people who've contacted you since you've become more under the media spotlight?
It's not so much more under the media spotlight. I've been harassed from the beginning, and my name is turned to mud so that nobody will look at the book. That's the game plan. But anyone who's read through the book, it becomes quite obvious what happened. And that's why the book is really a course in critical thinking, so that the person themselves understands it. It isn't a belief. Mm. It's like, you know, why is this way? Yeah. For example, you remember the toasted bus?
Yes.
Where are the scorch marks on the toasted bus? So you get somebody looking at that picture and they go, oh, yeah. Because if someone's had some rip-roaring fire, you'd have scorch marks, wouldn't you? Mm. Or, you know, why are the trees, big, bushy, leafy green trees overhanging these toasted cars and the toasted bus? Why did the leaves get burned up?
When we last spoke, you had a guy on with you, talk show host, West Coast USA, Pete Santilli, who was there to sort of guide us both through this material, and he was kind of a champion for you.
Yeah, he read the book and was excited about it, and here was somebody who, you know, a reader of the book. Hmm. And because, you know, often hosts, you know, they won't read the book, and they want to turn it into a case of belief. And what I like to do is say, you know, look on page, that's why I insisted on your having the book before. And because, you know, for example, I'm criticized saying there's, we all know there was hot molten metal and that people were burning up and, you know, in the dust cloud was pyroclastic and hot. I'd like you to do something right now. Turn to page 153.
Okay, hold on. got it here. I've got 105. Hold on.
153.
The light's not too great here where I am, but let me just flip you up. Got it here.
Okay, I'd like you to read there's two paragraphs down there at the bottom.
This is Assistant Fire Chief Marshal Richard McCahey, yeah?
Yep.
All right, he says, somebody, which actually helped me, I don't know who it was, after somebody said, I can't breathe, somebody, I don't know which direction it came from, screamed out, don't panic or relax, relax. It's not smoke, it's just dust. Just relax. At that point, that's when I started to realize my mouth was filling up with like a sand ball. All of a sudden, I realized when whoever said that, now I'm starting to pay attention to my surroundings. I realized there was no heat. You could breathe. Stuff was going in your mouth, but it was like a cool coming in. When you breathe in, I said, maybe he was right. You couldn't see it. It was gritty. Okay.
Yeah. Smoke displaces oxygen from the air. It consumes the oxygen. So that's the killer about smoke is that you can't breathe.
So this fire chief was expecting to be able to not to breathe, and he could breathe, and
right.
He didn't know why.
Right. There's no smoke. It's not smoke. It's dust. Mm. In other words, he had experienced the building turned to dust, and it was cooler. And there's various statements like that in there. And there's also, you've seen the seismic chart.
Yep. Now, the seismic chart we talked about last time, I've had people refute that. This is the fact that the buildings did not make the kind of impact.
There's a gasoline storage facility on the same strata that blew up. Somebody overfilled it and dropped a cigar or something. And that thing blew up. And it made a 3.0 on the Richter scale. 3.0 on the Richter scale. It left a P wave and an S wave and a surface wave.
I mean, look, I find it
above ground level.
That is now, one of the things I find most compelling about your work, Judy.
This is the S wave and P wave.
I studied not to a great advanced degree, and I didn't go to university to study it, but I did geology at school. And I find it really odd that those things, if they'd come down as you would have expected them to come down, floor on floor on floor, bang, 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 bang.
You should have a jackhammer pounding on the bedrock.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that many bangs makes an impact. The Earth literally ought to move. And from what you're saying with the charts that you publish in the book, then the Earth did not move to that extent.
But there's no S wave or P waves detected at any of the seismic stations. Mm. And the surface wave was lower than expected. It was these buildings, the towers are 30 times, that's 3 times 10, 30 times the potential energy of the Seattle King Dome. When they blew that up, it made greater or the same. You know, it was the same as the North Tower, and it was greater than the South Tower. It made a 2.3, and the North Tower made a 2.3, and then South Tower made a 2.1. And they calculate the Richter scale reading based on the surface wave. Well, if you get up off your mattress in the morning, you know, the mattress springs back. What happens if you take two 500,000-ton buildings and lift them off the ground? You're going to create a surface wave. This is actually the biggest, killer of the whole thing. There's no S wave or P wave. How do you smash buildings to the ground without hitting the bedrock?
So where are we now with all of this, Judy? That's what I want to know.
The evidence is still there. It's that it's been politicized. So it becomes opinion, or people spin it as opinion. Kind of like, is cigarette smoke, or is 2 + 2 = 4? Is that an opinion?
So you're going to keep working on this?
In other events, but it has taught me a lot about, like Spock would say, humans are very illogical.
Now, that was interesting where you said, and other events. What else are you looking at?
Oh, there's other issues with this. This is the biggest event for a lot of different reasons. You look at, we started to look at the cover of the book. Mm-hmm. You got the cover in front of you?
Yeah, no, it's Niagara Falls. I see it.
You see the building turning to dust,
yeah.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Did most of the building turn to dust in midair?
Well, it looks like it did.
And the remains look like they do out there. So what you're seeing here is a building turning to dust. The whole world could see that. But they were psyoped into believing that was a collapse. That's amazing, isn't it?
And do you say that that happened at the time when we were all watching this, or that
because
happened
people,
subsequently?
People were, people were told what to see. And the way I function, and one of the unique aspects of me is if my eyes and ears don't agree, I just turn off my ears and I don't hear. So I didn't hear what I was being told because it didn't make sense. So I shut it out and I was just looking at the pictures.
I suppose what I want to get to, I want to talk to you. I've got the book here. And anybody who wants to buy this book, it's not that easy to get hold of, but if you can get hold of it...
Oh, it is. It's very easy.
It's easier now, is it? Okay, because I know at times it's changed hands for hundreds of dollars, hasn't it, on Amazon?
Well, that's what the used books are always more expensive, almost always more expensive. Mm-hmm. If you order from my site and you live in the UK or in Europe, we have somebody over there who can send out the book to you, so it gets there pretty quickly.
And it's not going to bankrupt you anymore.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's not going to bankrupt the buyer.
It's $40 plus shipping. For the population in Australia, there's virtually the same number of purchases per population as in the U.S., and they have to pay a whole lot more for shipping.
What about here in the U.K., Judy? How much interest is there now in it here?
It's not quite as much as U.S. and Australia. Or Canada. Canada sometimes is ahead of, I keep hold of that statistic where the books are going. But if you think about it, this is a 554-page book. I think it's 544 pages.
Let me just go to the end of it. We're talking about, the last page here is 500 that I've got here.
But you get the appendices, and you have the
and you've got a map and stuff that comes with it as well.
And you also have the stuff in the front. Quite a lot of front stuff before the pages start counting.
No, understood. Yes, there's a lot of
and there's over 800 images and diagrams, and the book is all color.
Right.
You get a book like this, take it down to your local copy center, and how much do you think you can get them to reproduce it for? Xerox it.
Tell me.
Well, it's a dollar a page in most copy places, so that's $500 book. I mean, it's a book like this would be about $400, textbooks, so you know what the markup is.
Right.
But I basically charge cost.
Okay.
Charge a little bit more than that because, sometimes books get torn up in the mail and I have to eat that, So it's basically sold at cost to everybody.
Okay.
And so it shouldn't be an issue. You can get your library to.
I really.
To the UK with it.
I want to get into, if you don't mind, how you are, though, because you've taken this battering and you've been described as controversial and you've had people trolling do. I want to know how you are now.
I focus on the evidence.
Mm-hmm. But how are you? How are you bearing up under all of that? Does it affect you at all? Does it affect you?
No, there's people who get things and don't. There's folks who've referred my book as holy water. You show it to somebody, you can tell if they're a vampire. like holy water is like what you flick on somebody to see if they're a vampire or whatever. So if somebody reads my book and then says it's all bunk, that tells you a lot about them.
What does it tell you?
Their logic function doesn't work, or they have an agenda. As I say, they're either stupid by design, or it comes naturally.
You didn't answer when I asked you about Courtney Brown and the Remote Viewing Project, which was this year. Hold on for just half a second, please, if I can just say that on the show I had him on, okay, we talked about it, we went through what he says is the evidence, and he said this was some kind of plot planned at a very high level by a bunch of people we don't know about, but they exist.
That's what everybody says.
Right. So where do you stand vis-a-vis that?
There's somebody somewhere who planned this, but this didn't happen by accident. It didn't happen on the spur of the moment.
So you agree?
It was planned, yeah. And that's why I say, do you think those who planned it forgot to plan a cover-up?
And what would you say, Judy, is the nature of that cover-up?
Oh, if you don't like the lie behind door number one, we'll show the lie behind door number two. And herd people there. Build it and they will come. Build a truth movement and they will come. And then you could get everybody. It's easy to control a group, much easier than it is to control one individual. It's very easy to control public opinion because they keep confirming whatever their belief is to each other. So you politicize it and turn it into rah, 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 let's cheer for our team and go after anyone who doesn't agree with our team. That's politicizing it. It's no longer about science when it becomes about belief in your team and support of your team.
And what are you going to do about that?
There's nothing I can do about that. It comes up to each individual as to whether or not they want to know facts. But I think it's more important. That's what, if you've read my book all the way through, I think you would understand, you know, straight through, you'd understand about it being a course in critical thinking. It helps the person look with their own eyes, and then they start seeing it everywhere and being able to understand other things, like how easy it is to be misled. I grew up without a TV, so maybe that's another reason why I don't get hoodwinked so easily. And I remember one of the first ads I saw that just boggled my mind. I thought, you know, maybe I'm too dumb to understand what they're meaning because it seems kind of contradictory. And they said, buy and save. How do you save money if you're buying something?
Maybe what you're buying is an investment. Maybe what you're buying is an investment.
Right. But you see how the psychology works, that people get used to these phrases and then they start repeating the phrases and they don't think. Mm. And that's like 9/11. How many people say, oh, but you know, they found thermite. Absolutely. So thermite was used. Used for what? You know, what's the evidence it was used? Just you found some ingredients of the building. You know, you have every constituent of the building in that dust. You can find whatever you want to find. Well, maybe it was thermite plus something else. Well, it makes more sense to say it was bubblegum plus something else, because bubblegum doesn't contradict the evidence. Thermite does.
If you had your Judy, important question for you. If you had your time again, would you have gone through what you've gone through to do this?
Life is a set of learning experiences, so I've gotten more life than anyone I know of.
What does that mean?
If you learn about, you know, I feel like we're on this planet to learn, not to exploit somebody else, not to use somebody else and hustle, but we're on this planet to learn about each other, to learn about humanity, learn about the world around us. And this has allowed me to learn so much.
What have you learned?
You know, some of this, you know, this technology exists. You see, on the cover of my book, you see the building turn to dust. That right there is proof that a technology exists that can do that. It can do what was done.
Here's a question, though, Judy. Where have we seen this? Where have we seen this technology used elsewhere since then?
There's places I've studied this one a whole lot more, and other things I haven't studied quite as much. But there are questionable events that, you know, before or since. That doesn't change what we saw there. And that's why I'd like to keep the focus on the cover of image of my book. That right there is evidence or is proof that such a technology exists.
But I'm just wondering why it hasn't been used since in any...
How do you know?
Well,
you
know? I haven't seen anything collapse like that.
You haven't had the cameras on it and telling you all about it. There's various things that, you know, should be questioned, but people haven't been questioning them.
Well, has anybody, because we're all connected and because you must get a tremendous amount of email, somebody must have emailed you to say, Judy, I think you ought to know that this was also used here or there.
Other things that I've seen, I don't need people telling me whatever. There's things that you see and you say, that makes no sense otherwise.
Okay, that's interesting. What have you seen?
Well, see, you're wanting to get outside of this so we can get, you know, because I haven't presented all the evidence on that, so we can now, you know, get trolls speculating.
No, that's not what I want to do. I just...
Okay, here's an example. The bridge in Minnesota.
Talk to me about that.
That was in 2007, and I was there right after that. And they closed down all adjacent bridges so you couldn't see anything. On that one, they closed down the next bridge over. But the bridge was horizontal. They had half it closed down for road construction, you know, road repaving and plant work and whatnot. And so it only had half the load it normally has. At rush hour, the thing just dropped. People were on the bridge. They rode in their cars down to the bottom and then got out of their cars. The bridge went down horizontally. Can you imagine every single support of that bridge giving way at the exact same time? They claim it was pigeon poop that caused the steel to rust. Why would every single, you know, support give way at the exact same moment? We're talking down to the nanosecond.
So you would say that somebody deployed this technology.
No, there's something interesting that happened. You also had fuming. You had, you know, you had spontaneous combustion of vehicles, apparent spontaneous combustion of vehicles. But once you study what happened on 9/11, you then can see it. You go, you know, that's not normal. That needs some splaining. You know, Richard Carter would say, somebody has some splaining to do.
How's your diary looking for 2015, Judy? Are you going to be talking about this around the world?
If people want to have me for it, if they want to understand the real things. See, people tend to go in this, herd mentality. And I think the Thermite crew is getting a little bit desperate because they're claiming that, oh, she lies in her book about this, she lies in her book about that. She claims this, you know, she totally denies the sound of the first responder testimony of the sound of explosions. Well, here I'd like you to, you know, turn to page 110.
Okay, let's get that
in 111.
Okay. Hold on, I've got 168. I need to go back from there.
Okay. 110.
104. Yeah. 110, got it.
Okay, read Patrick, fighter Patrick Sullivan.
Okay, and this is somewhere we didn't go when we last talked, so I'm happy to do this. Okay, firefighter Patrick Sullivan, there was a deputy chief's rig on fire that was extended to 113...
That's a different, another rig. Somebody else's rig. They number all their fire trucks.
There was a big ambulance, like a rescue company truck, but it wasn't a rescue company truck. It was a huge ambulance. It must have had Scott bottles. I don't know what that means, or oxygen
look,
bottles.
Look at the picture above. That's the air tanks that the firefighters wear so they can breathe.
Yeah, it's a guy, with air tank on his back.
Yep. Okay, that's a Scott.
Got it. That's a Scott air pack. Yeah. Okay, you would hear the air go boom, and they were expanding.
Exploding.
Exploding, yeah. Yep, so we stretched a line and tried to put that out. He could only use booster water.
Okay, now do Todd Heaney, firefighter Todd Heaney.
Okay, it's firefighter Todd Heaney. I remember getting a drink of water out of their cooler there, and then we just started to put out the car fires, and the rigs were going, ambulances, I mean. There must have been 50 of these things burning heavily. The Scott cylinders and the oxygen cylinders were all letting go. They were all blowing up left and right. Okay.
And Rene Davila, see, there's question answer. The supervisor asking question answers. This is my favorite one.
Okay, Rene.
Go ahead.
Rene Davila.
Yeah, the next
question.
One.
At this point, was your vehicle lost? Answer. Basically, we all had to go around the building, come around, but it took longer than usual because you're walking in like this. If you'll pardon the expression, shit. Like you move and it's this soot, heavy dust. While we were walking, I realized that we only have two people. I see my vehicle. The seats are covered. I've still got my bag. I hold it like a trophy, like people collect basketballs. I haven't touched whatever the force was. It was so strong that it went inside of the bag. Okay. But we were there. Vehicle 219 was destroyed. Was it on fire? Answer, what? Was it on fire? Answer, fire.
We saw a sucker blow up. We heard a boom. So these are first responders with testimony of the sound of explosions. The Thermite crew says that she's totally denies, you know, firefighter testimony of the sound of explosions.
You have testimony of explosions, but they say it was a thermitic reaction. You say these cylinders were going up.
Well, this is the only thing I know of that has been, except for people. There are people exploding too. You hear boom like your microwave in your microwave oven. Does that mean it's a bomb in there? You know, bombs go boom, but not everything goes boom as a bomb. And there's no one identified a bomb going off. They heard explosions. These are things that were identified as exploding. There are vehicles that just went into spontaneous combustion or exploded. There are bullets in one police car's glove compartment. I forget what you call them, but we call it glove box. And they're just exploding. The bullets were pop, 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 pop.
Well, that's the heat, isn't it? But you're going to say to me, what heat?
No, it was a lack of heat. It was interesting just hearing them discuss that. So how did the fires get, or if they were conventional fires, how would it get over to the car park, and all the spot in between, area in between, is just a sea of unburned paper. So there's these issues that don't add up to, you know, the other, but the point being that they claim that I totally deny, you know, X, Y, and Z, but here it is, you know, in my book. And you know, they continue doing that. I read these parts on George Norrie's Coast to Coast. I read them on John B. Wells' show. And yet people come on after that saying that she totally denies sound of explosions. No, you have to identify what's exploding if you can. Mm. You know, and bombs explode faster than the speed of sound. That's why you hear boom. You know, they break the sound barrier. And so all of the adjacent buildings around the WTC complex should look machine gun fired if you had bombs going off. Correct?
Yes.
And that didn't happen. You know, you have nice surfaces. They didn't, they're, you know, maybe you have a ding here and there, but it does not look machine gun fired.
Judy, you put your career on the line for this. You said at the beginning of this that you know, you couldn't go back to doing what you did before, which was you were a professor of physics, weren't you? You were teaching physics anyway.
Mechanical engineering.
Mechanical engineering. Physics. Sorry, yeah, and applied physics. You said you can't go back to this. Has it been worth it?
Somebody has needed to do this. If I hadn't been doing this, you know, this nobody else would have brought this up.
But has it changed? The fact that you brought this up, what's it changed?
The fact that the building mostly turned to dust has at least has to be discussed. At first, I was ridiculed for saying that. Now it's like, oh, it was all the concrete in the building. It wasn't that much concrete in the building, but where's all the steel? So we're still working on that issue. But there's another piece of evidence that shows that the building mostly turned to dust. Page 186, if you look at those three images together, you see that tipping top of the South Tower, it just shrinks up before the hinge point moves down. It tips, and then notice it's not continuing to tip. And you've seen the videos, and it starts tipping, and then it stops tipping.
Yes, it sits back down on itself, doesn't it?
Here to violate the laws. Yeah, as soon as if you start tipping as a rigid body, you're going to keep on tipping. You can't pull your body back if you're just, you know, hinging over at a point. But if, as a rigid body, it's going to continue tipping. But if it's not continuing to tip, it's no longer a rigid body. All the little, you know, pieces of the building, the building's come apart and is turning into dust. So it can maintain the laws of conservation of angular momentum by each little speck continuing to rotate. Isn't that amazing?
Well, you know, I would say that I've seen buildings demolished before, and sometimes they've, you know, like industrial chimneys here in the UK, they're bringing those down all the time, and sometimes they do appear to tip slightly, and then they sit down. Isn't that what's happening here?
It doesn't just sit down. It's going away. Look at the hinge point. The hinge point doesn't start moving downward until that top piece is gone.
It does seem to powderize. And there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and look at the picture on the right. You can see the yellow seam of the building in the foreground. Mm-hmm. You know, I dash in with yellow. That's at about that's the mechanical floor, and that's at about the same point that the South Tower got its plane-shaped hole. And you see that's where it's still hinging, and there's nothing left much of the top one-third of the building.
Do you find that people are waiting for your next piece of work about this?
Well, I haven't wanted to bring that out because it would detract from this. This has, you know, is there, all the
so
issues.
You're saying, is there another piece of work about
yeah,
this?
Yeah, it's just more stuff that would be distracting in this book, but it's more of the same. You know, it's more depth.
Are you going to bring that out at some point?
I don't know because you know, the information here is plenty. But it's stuff that, you know, this book is, you know, 500 some odd pages. I had to take out, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff, and that's it just got set by the wayside.
So it's the end of 2014. It's nearly Christmas when we record this now. It's December. You're looking down the barrel of 2015. Where are you at, though, with all of this? This is your life's work. You can't go back to your academic career, you say?
Right. Yeah.
Where are you at now?
Yeah, I do presentations on critical thinking and how to analyze problems. Having an opinion and an internet connection is not analyzing a problem. That's witch hunting. But it's being able to observe what is right in front of you, and that's what's so badly needed, because look at the cover image of my book. Why did so many people not see that right in front of their face?
I think one of the problems with it all, and it stuck with me for the last couple of years since we spoke, is the fact that you fire off so many questions in people's minds with this book. And maybe a lot of ordinary people, especially if they've got lives to continue, or maybe they were involved in this whole thing and they're
What do you
trying to
mean?
forget it.
There's questions that the answers are in the book.
Well,
I don't spoon feed it to them, but they can see it. I'm asking you, did the building turn to dust? That's not a question that's still out there. It has an answer
it
that's
appears
right.
from the pictures that we see that the building turned to dust. Now, whether
Yeah,
the building
it's
is
not just. Yeah.
within that dust, whether the building is that dust.
Well, then you look at the leftovers, and there's I told you about the tipping top of Tower 2. The fact that it appears to stop tipping shows that it's turned to dust. That's for people who are into physics. But the basic things are, if the building collapsed or was blown up with bombs, you'd have a pile of rubble left over. It didn't happen. You had a few things left, but not much. If it had slammed to the ground, you'd have a seismic signal that reflected that. That didn't happen.
So
If it's if it slammed to the ground, it would have destroyed the bathtub.
you've got this
The
body of
di
work. You've got some more research that you're not going to bring out just yet because
but
it's more of the
it's just
same.
more of the same. Yeah, it might serve to distract you. It's just more. It's the stuff that was removed from this. But
So
it's
what are you in this new year going to do with all of this? How are you going forward now? What are you doing?
so how can we cover up what she's about to present?
No. I'm keen to know what you do next because you're so committed to this.
Right. And you know why? And that's why I keep trying to get to. If you go back to that front image, that's irrefutable. Why do people not see it? Because they don't know how to look at what's right in front of them. But the significance of this and the importance of this, this technology exists. There's no denying it. The buildings aren't there anymore. They mostly turn to dust. Therefore, something that can turn buildings mostly to dust exists.
Does it
And it's
exasperate
out
you that
there.
your phone hasn't gone and a voice on the other end, hang on, a voice on the other end hasn't said, "I'm Senator so and so from so and so. I just want you to know, Judy, I followed your work. I think you're right."
Oh, quite a few of them have said that in person.
Have they?
They just, yeah, but their hands are tied. Their hands are tied because it's a perception management issue, and they'd be out on their ear if they said anything about it, because what does the majority of the public want to hear? You tell people what they want to hear, what they expect to hear, and not what's right in front of them in pristine condition.
Doesn't that leave you massively exposed?
No, because of the perception management issue. Oh, she's just an idiot. Okay, we don't. It's a numbers game. If I'm ridiculed as an idiot, but they're not dealing with the evidence still. They ridicule me personally. That doesn't deal with the evidence. They can't refute the
Which
evidence.
brings me to the point that I tried to ask you. You're a human being, so am I. If I was castigated like that, if I was ridiculed in that way, it would get to me, and I'd really want to defend myself.
I'm secure. I know what reality is, and I know it inside now. Okay, why do I know what I know that I know? And that's an important thing to learn through all of this. Not what you assumed or what you've been told, and then you believe it because you've been told it. And then, like people who believe there's all this hot molten metal that people are wading through, they don't stop to realize, when people have burned legs, if they're walking through something that hot, but they just repeat things and they don't think. And as soon as you start thinking, now I understand why I know what I know. And it's also from my years of experience. That's my area of expertise, is observation and analysis of new materials. Materials characterization. And so, I'm looking at it like a test specimen. It's not personal to me, it's about the evidence. And people can spit on me and throw yo-yos at me or whatever. They're still not dealing with the evidence. And it comes down to the evidence. It's a separate issue. It may trick other people, but that's their issue, their problem. But again, going back to the cover image, there we now know there's a technology exists that can do that. You know, a lot of the detractors like to say that oh, she doesn't have the serial number, so she has nothing. No, you have the evidence right there. You can see that there's something exists that can do that. Now, think of that was used for very evil purposes that day. But this shows that somebody somewhere has in their power the ability to affect matter on an atomic level. Somebody somewhere has the ability to affect matter on the atomic level. Now, instead of using it for evil purposes, we could use it for good purposes. Free energy for the planet. We don't have a culture anymore where you exploit others.
But you need to know who's got it and where it is.
Well, a lot of people want to go after the WHO. That doesn't deal with the problem, because I bet you there's 20 more people lined up to push the button next time.
They are the repository of the technology. So you find them, you find the technology, and then you can start recreating it and helping people, like you said, would be a good thing to do, which of course it would be.
But the first step is to look at the cover image of my book and realize the whole world saw it. They don't need to be convinced. They just need to open their eyes and look and see this technology exists. Okay. You know, the building's gone. It mostly turned to dust. That's not a debate. It's evidence. And it's kind of like, you know, if you want to know how tall somebody is, you start with a tape measure, not a debate.
Dr. Judy Wood, second appearance, your thoughts, please. Welcome, as ever. Go to the website, www.theunexplained.tv, www.theunexplained.tv, and follow the link, and you can send me an email there with guest suggestions or thoughts about this guest or previous guests. And anything you want to say, really, is absolutely fine. And if you'd like on the way to make a donation to help this work continue, that'd be great too. I'll be bringing you very soon the results of our poll and bringing you some ideas that I've got for the future of this show. Thank you very much. Some of you have sent me very detailed ideas about the future of this show that include ideas for marketing, advertising, subscriptions, and all kinds of stuff. And thank you. I read all of your emails and I take them all on board. More great guests coming soon here on The Unexplained. So until next we meet here, please stay safe, stay calm, and stay in touch. My name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained. And until we talk again, take care. Bye-bye.